The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Southern Sports Today proudly presents The Chuck Oliver Show. It's an inside look at everything college football. Now live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time to talk college football with the reigning king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
Mississippi State normally has two settings, goal-wise. This isn't the best one. Chuck Oliver Show on a Thursday. Can't tell you how happy I am. Came here for a little college football conversation today. Thank you so very much. And we're going to do exactly what we do every day. You come here, been doing this for about a decade. So it's going to be college football talk, and that's what you want. When I say Mississippi State normally has two settings, goal-wise, like, wherever you talk to anybody associated with the program, could be a fan even. Like I say even because they're not in the building. I'm talking mostly somebody who on the 15th and 30th, that direct deposit, it says from Mississippi State Athletics or the university or whoever. But fans, absolutely, pile on. If you were to take a survey over the long history of Mississippi State football, in almost every season, there are two possibilities for where the goals are directed. The goal of a Mississippi State football team in any particular season in the 90th percentile. The goal is either directed within the state, beating and or being better, whatever that means, and you know it. Beating or being better than Ole Miss, that's one direction. Or where they are now, the goals are directed in Starkville, like towards themselves. That's the truth. That's the reality. That's the existence for Mississippi State football. Since they've started playing, and then the SEC came about in, I think, 1932, and all through their lives as Mississippi State football, that program, there have been some individual seasons that blipped. There have been some wins that have been taken away from the NCAA in some of those seasons. I don't care about that. That's irrelevant to me. It's not about Jackie or what Kentucky might have done in 76. I don't care about any of that. I'm talking about the overall tenor from a 12-year-old who lives in state and as a Bulldogs fan, because that's what dad and grandpa are, to the college junior in Starkville, and she grew up Mississippi State fan her whole life too. To somebody my age, it has been either a fan or watching this, or you comment on it for a living. Anybody's measuring stick of Mississippi State, you would be hard-pressed to find any season where going into it, where are your goals? You'd be hard-pressed to find any season in the history of that program where the goals really stretched outside the state. The real goals. We want to be champs of what? Egg Bowl? And we would like to be champions of the University of Mississippi football team as well. We would like to be champions over them. But other than the years when things are either in transition now or so challenging now, internally or externally, both. Other years, the goals aren't even based in Oxford. A lot of times with the Mississippi State football, the goals are based within. It's about us right now. Now, I will tell you, every single program, what I just said, we're focused on us. Every program, that's true. It really is, I promise. But there are also elements to certain programs like Michigan, for instance. Do you think Jim Harbaugh, the goals, we've looked inward. We worry about us. We don't worry about the opponent. He had a period of his practice called the Georgia period. And that was in like March and April, okay? And July and August. The Georgia period. Why? Well, so we can be more like them or beat them or whatever it was. All right, I'm in. Georgia dumped a sack of bricks on Michigan. And Jim Harbaugh, you know what he did? I give him credit. He's goofy and he climbs trees and he shouldn't have taken a shirt off that day. There are plenty of days in his life Jim Harbaugh could have taken a shirt off. That wasn't one of them. So he's made some missteps. He got a lot of crap for, what are you talking about, Michigan? Georgia, you're Michigan, and you've, even if you're going to single out one opponent, it's Ohio State. And I think they also have an Ohio State period. But that whole thing about we're focused one day at a time, one opponent at a time, we play Central Michigan in week one, and I don't even know who we play in week two. It's Hawaii. So if it's true that you don't know who you play in week two, it's because it's also a cupcake. But that whole thing about we're all about us, we worry about within. Nah, that's not true. And you don't want it to be true. There are plenty of programs who, you know, we're talking about Michigan. We're going to have a practice period where we practice to either be like Kirby and Georgia or specifically to play against Kirby and Georgia. Whatever it is, we're going to up the tough meter and we're going to be big and burly. So whatever they say about that. Do you know where you want your program to be? We're good enough so we can handle all of this. We do play Central Michigan in week one and Hawaii in week two, and I'm well aware that Texas comes to town week three. So if you're Michigan and whatever your schedule, yeah, you can do that. Mississippi State can't, and in almost no case ever has Mississippi State entered a season thinking outside the state borders. And when they're even looking at Ole Miss, that's when it's a pretty good offseason for them. So where Jeff Lebby sits now is that second option. And he has no choice about this. If you look at the resume, and I mentioned this as soon as it happened, and then we saw what was developing, you know, as far as the scheduling and that, you know, no divisions and we're not going to pod you and, you know, all this, that everybody's going to immediately bounce onto either Texas or OU schedule. And for a program like Georgia, it's interesting, but it doesn't necessarily change anything. If we go to Baton Rouge or we go to Austin, 6-1 for Mississippi State. Well, okay, why didn't we add Kansas State and Texas Tech instead? Because adding these two programs, it's different. See, like, it changed everything for them. It didn't change a whole lot for Kirby. Like, it got his attention. He's like, okay. Well, that's who we'll prep for now. Mississippi State, it added like another 80 feet on the mountain that they're scaling and trying to get up. So against the backdrop of everything we already know about that, somehow, brand new coach who does want to throw the ball. Now, he wants effective offense is what he wants. But against the backdrop of all that, they somehow lost the portal. And when I say lost the portal, I mean specifically at running back, at shiny, sparkly pieces on the perimeter, at QB. You brought in Jeff Lebby. Like, has anybody noticed this? It's not unique to Mississippi State to have a whole lot of bunch of players jump in the portal. But Jeff Lebby, an offensive guru who had already kind of plied his wares in state. I mean, it was Lane, but it was Jeff Lebby. It's not like somebody flew a helicopter over, pushed him out, and, all right, introduce yourself. He showed up on campus, and they lost the portal specifically on offense, specifically anybody whose hands are on the football. Now, they replaced the positions. Like, Will Rogers left, and, well, Blake Shapen's in. If Blake Shapen's healthy and functioning well, like, that could be fantastic stuff, Blake Shapen. Fantastic. Will Rogers, I believe, has completed more passes than anybody in the history of the conference. And so, I mean, there's a lot of guys with sterling resumes, but Will Rogers couldn't get out of town fast enough. and he went, he was, how many guys did he pass on the way from UW to Alabama versus him going that way? And so Will Rogers left. And the running backs left. They lost the running back portal. They lost the wide receiver portal. Might have lost the tight end portal, but I don't know what he's going to do with them. So it really shocked me, because normally when a head coach shows up in the portal era, which is the last, you know, 3-4 years, guy shows up and it's time to create, in my own vision, my image, what I believe is offense. Now it's time to, Kirby showed up in Athens. What's the first thing he did? And this was pre-portal, way, way, way pre-portal. Remember the first thing he did? He went back to Alabama and he got Mo Smith, a guy who played the position Kirby had played, on the side of the ball that Kirby coaches. And he knew I could drop him in, speak the same language. Like, that's nothing new. Jeff Lebby, it went entirely different on that side of the ball portal-wise, and I just can't figure why. Because he has a sterling reputation, and there's a lot of excitement, but it's just another one of those levels when I talk about everything else from the Mississippi State perspective right now. Hey, there's just a lot of stuff, and it's always been challenging. I said, I started playing football 130 years ago. It's never been easy. SEC's been in business for almost a century, almost pushing it. They got one SEC championship, and they've played all the seasons. Missouri hadn't played all the seasons, and they're not a great program, but they hadn't played all the seasons. Ever so often, you stumble onto something. Mississippi State, they hadn't stumbled enough. They how long have they been in the SEC? All of the seasons. One championship. Pretty sure Vanderbilt doesn't have any. But one SEC championship. And it doesn't appear to be changing anytime soon. So, like, is any of this new? Yes, the level, the depth, the challenge, the lack of what I expected a response to be from the portal. I'm putting together a barnstorming all-star offense, come to Starkville for a few months. And that literally is the pitch. Come down here for a few months. The hope for Mississippi State now ahead of Saturday spring game. They're one of those programs. Ahead of Saturday spring game, which will be 4 days after the portal open. The hope now is that following the spring game and the increased attrition from their own roster, I mean, Jeff Lebby, they've got to go on a shopping spree, and I don't know the industry and commerce associated with their name, image, likeness. I don't know, like, to what depth. They'll be able to go get some players because of cash payments. Yay for them. But I don't know the depth, the level of player. If you're talking about some premier guys who looked around after spring and didn't like their environs. So Mississippi State, it's going to be a big challenge. And even when they start jumping on the portal, I mean, look to the left and right and everywhere else around them. And it seems to be guys who may be at least, you know, programs a little more deep pockets or even a lot more deep pockets. So, all right, we will break and jump into it on this Thursday next.
To the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
It's a Thursday on the Chuck Oliver Show. Full up on the Duncan Newsmaker line. Nick Shepkowski, USA Today. We're going to talk a little Fighting Irish bottom of the hour. I have no idea what their offense is going to look like this year. I know what Mike Denbrock would like it to look like. Man, any bigger change in OC search than turn down, I'll promote the tight ends coach, to I'm going to LSU and taking their guy. Like, that actually happened. So we'll talk Notre Dame, bottom of the hour. We got some OU talk in hour two, some Mississippi State talk in hour two. So all that is on the way. I continue to be a huge fan Steve Sarkisian, and I'm glad that he is succeeding now, because it was a fair question to ask. It was before 2 years ago. I was like, you realize he's been head coach at like three pretty good programs now, and he hadn't won yet. And now he's won. And I think actually now he's winning. Like, it's going to be an ongoing thing. And so does he. Steve Sarkisian, the reason I'm saying I've been a big fan of him for a long time, and I continue to be, he was honest. And what I'm talking about is ahead of wrapping up their spring, he was talking with the media yesterday afternoon, and he was honest. He acknowledged the possibility of taking the Alabama job after Saban retired. He said, crossed my mind. It really did. And when I say he was honest about it, in his exact words, he said, naturally, I'd be lying if I said I didn't think at all. But it took me all of about 60 seconds to say, yeah, I'm not doing that. I had an awesome 2 years at Alabama. Love my time under Coach Saban. But ultimately, you want to reap what you sow, and this is where we are now. We've poured a ton into this program for 3 years. We're on the cusp. Says, we're going to go on a run that I think is going to be epic. Now, I'm sure that, like, Lance Leipold at Kansas is saying the same thing. Hey, man, we're about to go on a run here. You say that, and it's always just about to be better than it's ever been, and you want to jump on now. He says, I believe that, and our staff does too. Our players do. So he goes on down that vein, but he started with all of this by saying that I thought about it for about 60 seconds. And most times, do you know what you get from a head coach, especially one in a situation level like Sarkisian's in? Would not have left. Didn't matter. Offered me $100 million. There is no way they could pry me loose. And that's not true. And so what normally follows is you have the denial. There's never even any contact. And so but everybody can be swayed. And when it is a job like Alabama, no matter where you are, 60 seconds, you're like, whoa, wait a minute. What I'm saying, he described his response and his timeline. That's what a satisfied, content employee does when a dream job comes open and they may want you. And then maybe you realize you're satisfied and content. And you don't shake all your professional pillars and move and begin again. So that's where Sarkisian is, and he's acknowledged what every coach should have. Yeah, I thought about it. I mean, my gosh, it's Alabama. But then I was like, no, wait a minute. I love Florida State, Texas, et cetera. And so he did, I don't want to say come clean about it. He just revealed, hi, I'm a human being. What's up, Heath?
I'm a little puzzled here, Chuck. And I'm a little puzzled because of what's going on with the ongoing saga of Boulder and the transfer portal. More guys are on their way out, and this thing is increasingly looking like maybe it's all coming down in a really, really bad way. The latest name last night that got people's attention was Alton McCaskill. For those who are not familiar, McCaskill was actually a really nice player at Houston. In fact, Holgorsen was really ticked off when he was their coach still. That he lost this kid, because you're talking about a guy who was the American Conference Rookie of the Year while he was at Houston in 21, ran for 961 yards, and then wound up injuring himself. And they thought they were going to get him back for last year. Instead, he transferred to Colorado. And that one, he wound redshirt last year. That was a guy from last year they really thought was going to make a step forward this year. By the way, there's a kid that transferred in from Alabama. Top 35 player, transferred in, played linebacker last year, and now he's in the portal today. Again, the outflow continues, but here's the part that really just kind of blew my mind. So there is an account that follows Colorado sports called Scobuff Sports, and it sent out the following, quote, this portal window has been brutal so far. Best wishes, Alton McCaskill. Chuck, Rick George is the athletics director at Colorado, and he sent, in a response to that tweet, the following. Thank the AGs that filed the temporary restraining order. Huh?
Okay.
The way this works, just for anybody who doesn't understand, the temporary restraining order means everybody can transfer as much as they want. What it doesn't mean is that you are required to transfer. The idea that all these kids are leaving Colorado and it's somehow the fault of the fact you can transfer again without sitting out, if they were happy at Colorado, they'd be at Colorado. No one's forcing them to go anywhere. Chuck, this is just straight up stupid.
Yeah, and when you said, and then who responded there? Was it the AD?
That's the athletics director, Rick George, who said, thank the AGs who filed the temporary restraining order.
When you said a kid tweeted out something, And then the athletic director responded. I was like, yeah, it doesn't matter what he says. This is not going to be good or smart or well thought out, et cetera. I guess the point he's wanting to make is if not for Tennessee and Virginia saying back off NCAA, all of this wouldn't be happening. Didn't this exact thing happen at his school a year ago? Like, you only have 85 scholarships, and I think they actually did have 86 in turnover.
Correct. No, the whole philosophy of the program, they literally have only signed like 7 or 8 high school kids. The entire philosophy of the program is we're going to go grab all these kids out of the portal. So you come off like a hypocritical dunce by saying anything about the idea of grabbing transfers in a hurry, but especially to imply somehow that, well, these kids would be forced to stay if not for this, and that's the problem. No, the problem clearly is that whatever they thought they were getting at Colorado, whether that's the experience or how they'd be coached, whether that's the level of winning, whether that's NIL money that maybe they thought they'd get and they aren't getting, or they're finding out that other programs just have bigger bags than Colorado, which lots of them have. Whatever it is, the idea that the problem is the thing that is literally the way you are trying to build the entire program, that's the problem, not the other stuff. That is incredible effort at buck passing by somebody who I think, Chuck, is looking at this and realizing, okay, we took a moonshot, and for whatever reasons, it looks like we're going to miss the moon, and I'm going to be the one who's held accountable, and so I'm going to start the buck passing now. That's what this looks like to me.
It's a change in narrative from someone who actually was sort of the petri dish for, well, all right, well, let's take the far end. You know, the one end of the bracket is Dabo. We don't do this. Colorado will be the other end of the bracket. This is all we do, or we actually do it. And I wasn't kidding, folks. I think the math was they actually had 86 players come into the program on scholarship because they had more than 85 leave, like through the turnover. It's an unreal situation in that Colorado also, and this escapes, you know, a lot of conversation. Colorado has always been known as a place where there was no money, where they didn't spend money, where they had state limitations on length of contract and also budget and everything else. And so that Colorado willingly embraced itself into a game where it was all about cash.
The king of college football, no matter where you go.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save. And save and win.
Hey everybody, Buck Blue here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car-buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit jimellis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
New Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Everything that man just said is true. Talking college football on Chuck Oliver Show. Been doing it 2 hours a day for almost a decade. 9 states and 60 sticks. Thank y'all for the blessing. I've told you, when there is a football thing going on, My two questions are, can I go? Like, is it open? Am I allowed? And is there good on good? For spring games, that can be iffy. Like, Marcus Freeman's decided to go, like, it's not even old school. It's like Old Testament now. We're going to divide up into two teams and the kids draft and all that. And that's fine if you're not going to have a very productive 15th session, but you may not care about that. It's his practice. He can do what he wants. But when you talk about, like, changes in spring games and approaches and everything else, it really has become more about, in some cases, let's just put on a show versus let's go out and get something done. Whether you have a new quarterback, a new OC, a new head coach, whatever you want to sprinkle out there, that is absolutely going to be a big part of what you do. Want to welcome on right now. We're going to talk a lot of things when it comes to Notre Dame. From USA Today, it's Nick Shepkowski. Nick, welcome. How you doing, man?
I'm great. Thanks again. Good to talk to you again, Chuck.
Yeah, I appreciate you making some time. I'm going to talk Marcus Freeman and Notre Dame and spring game and all this other stuff. But I want to take a quick peek ahead to the NFL draft because it's always kind of a good loose-ish measuring stick for where a program is. How many Sunday guys do you have? Like, how many NFL players are on your roster? Because that's really how you win at the absolute highest level. And they had two selected in 22. They had three taken last year. There's upwards of, I don't know, five, six, seven. Let's talk about Notre Dame players in this year's draft and start at the absolute very top with maybe the number one pass protector in the draft.
Yeah. When you look at Notre Dame's history, to answer your question, I'd say, yeah, five or six is probably where your answer is on that of how many guys end up getting drafted. But yes, that Joe Waltz is going to be far and away the first Notre Dame player that's selected. Since I've been covering this team, following this team for the last roughly 16 years intensely, there's been some pretty good linemen that have come through here. Zach Martin, probably the top of that list in terms of pro output with the Dallas Cowboys, a mainstay, a future Canton-bound Hall of Famer. Quentin Nelson, obviously, a stud. Mike McGlinchey, a top 10 pick. Ronnie Stanley for the Baltimore Ravens was a top 5 pick. He's been outstanding, very key in their run production as well. I'll tell you right now that Joe Walt is as talented as any of those guys, especially, obviously, the tackles that I mentioned there. But he's as talented as any of them. And the thing about Joe Walt that I think is interesting and why it's, yeah, you might be getting value with him. Say you take him in the Titans at 8. I see a bunch of mocks that have him there. Some places have the Chargers taking him. The thing about Joe Walt, one, comes from bloodlines. His father was a Kansas City Chiefs offensive lineman, multiple Pro Bowls there. Kind of gets how you have to become a great pro. Takes a lot of work, dedication, everything. He understands that. He's seen it. He's lived it. But also, this is a guy that only started playing offensive line, a tackle position, halfway through his freshman year of college. He was recruited as a tight end and played tight end at the start of his freshman year. The other offensive lineman that will probably get drafted, Blake Fisher, was the huge recruit that year. He was a five-star guy. He was from down by Indianapolis, and he was the one that was supposed to be like the next great thing at offensive line. I mean, he wasn't bad. But what happened was he tore his meniscus. It was his first start against Florida State that year, 2021. And not to say he was never the same, just probably never reached that level of hype while at Notre Dame. So when you look at all, you're getting the total package. I tend to think he's a better pass blocker than he has run blocker right now. Probably has some room for growth, especially in the run department. But whoever gets him, I have trouble believing it. Only thing that would slow him down is injuries. You can say that about literally any guy in the draft, but I have trouble believing that that's not going to be their mainstay left tackle for the next 10 to 12 years.
All right, and then go the other end, because I've told people it's more than just great hair, but there is question about Sam Hartman. What do you think his future is? He's going to get a jersey. He'll get a pension, won't he?
Yeah, he'll get a jersey. He'll get I don't know if he gets drafted. I don't know if he gets in the seven rounds. His experience, his leadership, those are both great. I think you saw in the bigger games last year where he was kind of brought in to be that difference maker, to close the gap, be one of those kind of gap-closing players for Notre Dame at a very key position. He wasn't able to get it done. The Ohio State game comes to mind. The Clemson game comes to mind. The Louisville game where he had probably his worst game of the year comes to mind. And so, yeah, I think he – I don't know if he sneaks into the seventh round or sixth round and gets his name called. I have trouble believing that he's not on an NFL cap in training camp and doesn't make a roster in terms of making a practice squad. I don't know. I mean, my future with Sam Hartman, I tend to believe that him, his interest in the sports media world, I think that he's going to be one that's going to be coming for you and I's type of jobs here before too long, because he's got a great knack for that, and I don't see it working out necessarily. I hope I'm wrong. I hope he goes on and plays 10, 12 years and collects a lot of NFL checks and does that. I don't see it as a pro, though.
Yeah, that doesn't work for me because he's young. He played quarterback for 5 years, and he has great hair. I'll just have to quit for appearances.
He walks in, and it's like he just does a little thing with that hair, and it's like, okay, all right. Well, no need for me here.
Chuck's that guy that used to work here. All right, let's talk about the current quarterback and his ankle. Riley Leonard, what's up?
So he underwent a couple of more procedures with that this offseason, and one after a couple weeks of spring practice. Not going to play in the spring game on Saturday. They say right now there's no reason for concern and he'll be ready for the season. We'll see. It's always one of those, all right, I'll take your word for it. However, I'll also kind of believe it when I see it type of thing. I think there's concern until you see him with regularity out there. I think the good news is, for Notre Dame in this situation, is that if Riley Leonard's not able to go or he's not able to start it when fall camp opens, that they have recruited the position better than they have in recent years. And so Kenny Minchie is a quarterback that was a Pitt commitment for a long time. And then at the very end of the 2022 season, he flipped his commitment to Notre Dame. That's a name to look out for. Steve Angeli was the starting quarterback last year in the Sun Bowl. Performed very well. It was against an Oregon State team that was depleted due to the transfer portal, but performed very well in that. So it would be between those guys. Those would be the two starting quarterbacks in the game on Saturday. And so I tend to think that there is a little bit of concern with Leonard just because of the history there and what he stumbled through the second half last year with injuries after he was hurting at the end of the Notre Dame game. Obviously had them in position to nearly upset Florida State until he went out of that game. So I think it's kind of a wait-and-see type of thing. They're saying all the right things, but so far all the right things haven't been happening physically so far for Leonard at Notre Dame.
All right, let's just talk about visible, obvious DNA. Do you see that from Mike Denbrock on the offense?
Oh, my God, yeah. You're getting a modern-day offensive coordinator, an offense that seems like it'll have an identity, not just kind of going with whatever. It didn't have an identity last year. And I know I was hard on Sam Hartman there a little bit, and I don't see him being a great pro necessarily. He wasn't dealt the best hand at Notre Dame either. When he committed, he thought he was getting Tommy Reese as his offensive coordinator and thought things were going to be probably done one way. Instead, he got Jared Parker. And what you're going to see from Notre Dame is, the good news is, really any of the quarterbacks kind of fit the mold of what Denbrock's been able to do and get very high performances out of a lot of different guys in his offensive coordinating career here, especially in the last decade or so, where, yeah, they can throw for a lot of yards, but they can also beat you on their feet, and Riley Leonard can certainly do that. So that part, he's going to bring that to the game. I think that the days of seeing Notre Dame line up in the two tight end, three tight end sets that they would do and do a lot, I think that you're going to see them get away from that a bit. And you're going to see Notre Dame, you don't always think of Notre Dame, especially on the offensive side of the ball, being, okay, well, that's a place with a lot of weapons. You think of great offensive lines. You tend to think of some pretty good tight ends, tend to think of some pretty good running backs over the years. Don't really think of the receivers as much. In recent years, at least, you don't really think of the quarterbacks as much. And I think that you're going to start to see that Denbrock really highlight those things. And one guy that he seems to really like so far early on in spring camp anyway, a player that as a freshman last year, Jaden Greathouse, wide receiver, started the year with a bang, had a very good start to the season, and it kind of faded about the end of September, early October. I think he only had one or two receptions the last four or five games of the year last year. He, by all reports, by all of those that can see the full practices, not just the abbreviated sessions the media gets to see, by all reports, he has been lights out. He has been the real deal. And it seems to be that he will be a very, very focal point of this offense this coming season.
All right, last thing for you, and this is just an opinion because I like Al Golden. I think he's a pretty good coach. I know one Notre Dame grad. I know a Notre Dame fan. My focus group of two, they're both like, arm's length. If I had a larger pool of Notre Dame fans to talk about, what's the general feel on Al Golden?
I mean, are they still bringing up what he did? He had a safety blitz against Ohio State his first game.
Oh, I heard all of it.
Defensive coordinator. Is that what's still in their mind?
All of it.
Because you look past that, and I have trouble looking of much Al Golden's done wrong. I mean, he's gone with – not to say his defenses aren't talented. They're very talented, especially the defensive backs, where Notre Dame hasn't been near that elite level in a long time. They're getting real close to that. Al Golden has made Howard Cross a focal point in one of the best interior defensive linemen. He's played a big role in that. And Al Washington, the defensive line coach, has a role in that as well. I'd be curious what these two want out of Al Golden, honestly. I think that Al Golden, you make a conversation. I'm not going to say that, like, all together it's the best coaching staff. Marcus Freeman still has losses against teams. He just has 2 years that
yeah, the Marshall and Stanford thing.
Yeah. And then last year, even a down Clemson team at Louisville getting smoked by them. But if you're just taking coordinators, Al Golden's towards the top of your defensive coordinator list, I think, nationally. And I think Mike Denbrock, what he did last year, but really what he's done the last decade, that resume kind of speaks for itself. I'm not saying it's the best in the country, but you stack it, the resume of those two up against just about anyone there, and they have a pretty compelling case.
You know, it's funny because I was under the Mike Denbrock conversation. I mentioned before you went on, I was like, I can't imagine a head coach who had a different hiring process than – as far as we understood, he, for OC, turn down, promote the tight ends coach. And then a year later, he was like, nah, I'm going to go take the LSU OC. Against the backdrop of that, it was just a general criticism of his hiring up until Mike Denbrock. And I was like, what about Al Golden? Meh. And I was like, no, I think Al Golden's more than meh. So it's interesting to get your perspective on that. But it was just a general overview of the hiring except for Denbrock.
Yeah, so an interesting thing, I guess, on that, and expands a little bit, is that, and this ties back to all the way when Brian Kelly left for LSU, some of the things that he mentioned were the need for a new football, a football facility, practice facility, and all of that. The dining hall at LSU was something that he highlighted right away, of saying, well, that's something that Notre Dame doesn't have. And so that's all supposed to be unveiled this weekend with the spring game going on Saturday. The reports are out that there's going to be new finances put into that. But I think it ties into the coordinator search that you were just saying as well. Andy Ludwig, the offensive coordinator at Utah, who does a phenomenal job. He's won with offenses that throw the ball over the field. He's won with offenses that can just out-physical everyone. Very good offensive coordinator. He was being paraded around Notre Dame's campus last year as if he was about to be hired to be offensive coordinator. I mean, they showed him at a hockey game on campus, everything with Freeman, with Jared Parker, actually, who got the offensive coordinator job. And then all of a sudden it turned into, oh, there's this clause in his contract and would owe Utah X million dollars if you're able to land him. And Notre Dame's top brass, I'm not saying Marcus Freeman, I'm saying Jack Swarbrick and the administrators in the athletic offense, then they put their foot down and said, yeah, that's not happening. I think it's entirely different when you go get Denbrock. Denbrock obviously has Notre Dame ties. He's a Midwest guy. His family's from Michigan, and he spent a lot of time here, so that helps. But it also takes a lot of money to go get a guy out of LSU and have him come call plays for you and run your offense, and they were able to get that done. So to me, it speaks a little bit of a new offensive coordinator going bigger and bigger than that, and new athletic director, Pete Pavakwa, kind of putting his thumbprint on things right away of saying that, okay, well, if we're going to be a powerhouse program, just like in Major League Baseball or the NFL or whatever sport you want to compare it to, then you have to act like a major program. And that involves spending money to essentially make money. And that's what Notre Dame is starting to do, which they kind of have dropped the ball on here for the better part of the last few decades.
Nick, appreciate the insight, brothers. Top notch. Thank you.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Nick Shepkowski, USA Today. managing editor, the Fighting Irish Wire. So it's just a totally different experience for Marcus Freeman to not, for instance, because he promoted Al Golden from within. Like, that was he was the offseason promotion. So he had promoted Jared Parker from within. And to go not just outside the program, because you had tried to do that before, but to go outside the program, like to LSU's program, it's like, that's a big difference in 365 days between what Marcus Freeman was doing this time last year. All right, we will break. Wrap up hour one next.
More college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Last year, they didn't have that stroke of luck on the turnover side, and Caleb could no longer save him. Right? So it could only save him to a certain point. Well, now you go from the Pac-12 to the Big Ten, which I would term a non-line of scrimmage league to a line of scrimmage league.
Tom Luginbill, former college quarterback, recruiting analyst at times, sideline reporter, studio, just excellent host. Guy knows football, and that's what he's talking about there, is Southern Cal. Their transition to the big in 2024 and what that will be like. The weaponry's there, and Lincoln Riley will figure out yards and points. Hasn't been the issue in the Pac-12. And up until at least the 23 season, his general description of the Pac-12, I mean, it's been spot on for a few seasons. That was one reason that I'd remembered, I'm trying to remember, was it Thibodeau? It was a prospect coming out of the Pac-12 two, three, four drafts ago. And whoever it was being compared about, well, his equal over here in the SEC, and the general feel was, well, the guy in the SEC, he went against NFL left tackles every Saturday. The guy from the Pac-12 probably didn't. This past year, I don't know that aspect of it changed. It really didn't. Showed you the impact of a quarterback when you get it right at the elite level, because what did USC do? They got the quarterback right at the elite level through the transfer portal. So did Washington at the elite level, at Oregon at the elite, like you saw up and down that conference, everybody who did it. It's because of the transfer quarterback. Hey, what's going on?
The portal obviously continues to be a big story, will be, over the next couple of weeks. First, who gets in, and then once it's time to get out, you know, who knows how long it'll take for some of these guys to decide where they go, and will guys just be open for bid all summer? Who knows? I know this much, though, Chuck. If you told me that I could have a piece of the action on one particular guy that was not a quarterback, because you never know, there might be somebody who's a quarterback who just says, hey, I'm going to auction myself off to the highest bidder, and that could break the bank. But other than that, if you told me that I could have a piece of the action on any one player in this year's portal, I might be willing to just go ahead and take the deal on TCU defensive tackle Dominic Williams right now. He got into the portal yesterday. And remember, this is something I don't know that a lot of people fully understand. The SEC has a rule that you cannot transfer within the SEC here in the spring portal. And some people wonder, well, now, wait a minute. Texas and Oklahoma are not in the SEC as of yet. So can they still take SEC? No, the answer is no. If you're going to compete in the SEC in this upcoming year, you cannot take a transfer from another SEC school, nor can they take one of yours. So that being the case, the 16 SEC schools who recruit the best defensive linemen in the country year in, year out to begin with, they're all off the board. But you got a kid from TCU that is available that probably is inclined to stay in the South, and who as a freshman was an all-freshman, all-American, all Big 12 last year, and he's available and out there. Chuck, he's going to do real well. I've heard Oklahoma thinks they've got a shot with him, but I guarantee you whoever gets him, he's going to do real well.
Question for you, and this is just, I don't know, I'm not pointing and saying it's going to end the sport here, but when Brian Kelly and others, by the way, are so blatant and directed about, I need defensive tackles, number one pursuit in the portal. And then we hear, and Bear Alexander's in the portal until USC says, oh, Bear will pay you. Or a TCU kid is in the portal and he stays in the portal. isn't this pretty close to tampering when you have a guy like Brian Kelly be so direct? We have to find defensive tackles in the portal, and boy, there just aren't enough. Isn't that kind of close to tampering?
It is, but
isn't that ringing the dinner bell for every other team's defensive tackles?
I would say that's correct, but I would also say at this point, given that the NCAA is perceived as being maybe not just no teeth, maybe not even gums at this point. They might be down to just sort of some cartilage on the other side of the gums. I don't think anybody cares, but you're right. No, it is not subtle, the open lust that is out there for people built like Dominic Williams who can do the things that this guy can do, and he is going to get paid, whether it's in Norman or somewhere else.
It used to be $50 in the parking lot as you were walking to your car and you saw the player, or something along those lines. Boy, that ain't the case now. He is up for bid, and somebody's going to be a taker.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Hey everybody, Buck Blue here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car-buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit JimEllis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.